Welcome, everybody. It's Federica on the show. So did you hear here at 3 p.m. Welcome back. And thank you for tuning in to my show. This is the show where I, your host, Federica, I take a deep dive exploring the ideas, maybe call them shower thoughts if you like, but the deeper questions and ideas and epiphanies about life that we often don't have time to think about when we're in the rush of daily living. So which is basically, I like to describe it as, it's the show about my shower thoughts, which isn't entirely a joke. Sometimes I do come up with these ideas, a lot of my context in the shower, but usually it's, you know, it's a platform for me to voice insights and thoughts that I have about what it is like to be alive in the modern world today. And there are topics that usually only come up when we have moments of reflection and deeper thought, which seems to be a real scarcity these days. A lot of people, I think, struggle to take time or even be able to process deep thinking nowadays. And we see this in the kind of reactivity of the dynamics, the way people interact with each other nowadays, particularly on the internet and social media, which is inherently a product of how that technology works. And that's a little bit about, a little preview of what I'm going to talk about today, as in that's one of the topics I want to talk about today, because the bigger topic that I want to talk about today is about the lessons that I'm taking from 2024 into 2025. I was posed this question this week, as it is at the time of this show airing. If you're listening to this live, of course, it's mid-December. It's almost Christmas time. It's almost the end of yet another year. And with my work, my other job where I work with a publication doing music journalism, around this time of year, we always do our end of year content. And one of the articles that I'm working on is examining what lessons we're taking from people are taking from 2024 into 2025, but that one is specifically about rave culture and the dance music industry. Of course, that's the field that I work in. So I've been thinking about this question in a broader context and really thinking about what lessons I personally am taking from 2024 into 2025. And I invite you to come with me on this journey and maybe ask yourself the same questions. I think it's a good opportunity for reflection. Whether you're the kind of person that makes New Year's resolutions or not, aka I am not, I think, you know, the transition from one year to another is always a good opportunity, a good time for reflection and forward planning. So I took it really broad, and I thought about what lessons did I learn before even thinking about 2025, what did I learn in 2024? And what am I taking to 2025? And I have a bunch of ideas. I made a huge list of things, and I'm definitely most likely not going to get to all of it today. It's definitely not an exhaustive list. It's a work in progress. But right away, off the top of my head, I would say the thing that I've learned about the most in 2024 is myself. I have done so much really, really deep self-work this year, starting at the beginning of 2023 and late into the year, but especially this year, that it's really been the entire focus of my year, I would say. And for, you know, maybe some of you who've been listening to the show for a while, you may remember that at the end of 2023, I went through a really bad psychological crisis. So I experienced a very real mental illness. I had a PTSD episode, which was related to things happening in my early life. Nothing happened to me here in the present, but like my life, I am safe where I am in my life now. But just different traumas from my past got triggered over the course of the last couple of years. I think it just kind of bubbled up into one massive eruption, which was awful, an absolutely awful experience. There's no way to, you know, sugarcoat it. It was probably the most terrifying, painful, confusing experience of my life. I don't wish it upon my worst enemy. If you have ever experienced anything like PTSD. It feels like a living nightmare. So that experience of having of going through a mental illness really did shake me to my core. And all I can say, you know, if to preface before going any further, if you're somebody who was experiencing trauma or really bad anxiety attacks, if you have, you know, some kind of mental health disorder that is making you feel out of control, I didn't think I would be here a year later after all this was happening saying what I'm saying now, which is that you can recover. It can get better. I did get better. And like legitimately, guys, this time last year, a year ago, I was in an I was experiencing an altered state. I was experiencing a very real mental illness, which dramatically altered my perception of myself and reality. And like, guys, I think like I described it as my brain broke. It really did. It felt like my brain broke. And I had convinced myself, like, because that experience was so intense and so dramatically different from my normal living state that it was like, this is so bad that there's no way I'm coming back from this. Like, I am just, that's it. I've lost my mind. My brain's broke. This is life now. And after many interventions and with therapy, conventional talk therapy, I had a really good therapist that worked with me through this, and I'm very, very grateful to her. Doing traditional talk therapy and specifically trauma focused therapy that really did help me work through those, you know, just the worst parts of it. I've been doing EMDR, which is, eye movement, desensitization. EMDR. It is an acronym, and I'm not remembering what the acronym stands for off the top of my head, but, no, sorry, let me silence my phone here for a second. There we go. It is, it's an eye movement. It doesn't have to be eye movement. It can be tapping. There's a few different ways of doing this treatment, but it's an intervention used for reprocessing trauma for people who have experienced PTSD. And I do think it's been very helpful. It's a body-based modality. So instead of you just talking, you're not just like talking through everything. It's a modality that basically uses certain prompts and body cues that trigger the right and left side of your brain. And you go through this treatment, you can go through it without ever like really talking out loud about what you're experiencing or your memories or anything. It's all about getting the brain to turn the right and left side on in a sequence. And what it basically does is just help your brain rewire itself so that those things triggering a traumatic response, those memories aren't being relived anymore. Your brain is putting them in the right category of memory so that they become just a memory. So it's basically untangled. I just like to describe it as like shaking all the tangles loose in your brain so your brain can like rewire itself to act normally. So that I will say has been very, very effective for me. I would highly encourage looking into it if you're somebody who has experienced anything with like trauma, PTSD, etc. Of course, you know, I can speak from my experience. It's something to look into. There's a whole bunch of other modalities. I've done a lot of like body work too. So like things like yoga, breath work. Breath work has been super impactful. Just going outside, it's been a whole huge process, but I can really say that, you know, I convinced myself that I was just like broken and, you know, this is the end and not of like feeling normal. I really didn't think I was going to bounce back. And I will say like the stuff works. It worked for me. Doing much better now, and it's like it all kind of seems like a bad dream. It's really weird. I'm still very much in treatment, and like I'm still doing EMDR. I'm still working through a lot of things, but I've had a lot of recovery, and I'm very, very thankful to be where I am today. And hopefully, this is a message of support and encouragement for some of you who may be also struggling, because you know, the hardest thing about experiencing a mental illness, I think for me, was feeling like you are the only one that is broken this way. You are breaking the scales. You're not normal. You will never be fixed because you are the only one who could be this broken this badly. And that is nothing but like that. That basically, to me, it was like I had to realize that is the dysregulation speaking. That is the anxiety speaking, because the state my brain was in. It is not true factually. There are many, many other people who experienced this exact same thing. And it may look different for everybody. Everyone experiences, you know, everyone's brain's different. Everyone's life is different. No two people's experience is exactly the same. But, you know, somebody else has gone through what you're going through in some way, shape, or form. And there are those who get better. I'm doing much better. It can be okay. It can work out. So let that be, I guess, my first lesson I'm taking from 2024 into 2025. You can recover. Even when things look as like really, really bleak and you don't know how you're going to get out of it, the best thing to do is just focus on the next best step. And, you know, I think even if you're not experiencing something like mental illness, or you're, you know, this can apply to all kinds of struggles in life. And now, going into 2025, I know that a lot of us are feeling quite stressed out, myself included, and apprehensive about the future, given what's happening in our country and our political situation, the outcome of the election. Yeah, I'm not looking forward to it. Frankly, there's no beating around the bush. I think a lot of us people who were left shocked, disappointed, confused, anxious, like those are all normal things to be feeling. So I want to share a few things that helped me to work through difficult emotions like anxiety and feeling maybe hopeless, those difficult emotions that can come up. And I have a whole list here of things that I've learned through therapy, and I have a list that I got from my therapist of things, cognitive distortions and other tools that I've used. And, I've used these tools to help work through, like, PTSD. But, again, it is not exclusive to dealing with things like trauma. These are tools that I found to be really effective just in my everyday life, too. And hopefully they can be useful to anyone who's listening as well. So before I jump into that, though, I do want to preface for my own, you know, legal purposes, I am not a licensed psychologist. So I'm not licensed to give professional, like, psychological advice or medical advice. And I'm not a therapist. So I'm just sharing the tools that have helped me. You know, take it at your own, you know, use your own discretion. When you're listening to whatever advice, or I guess not advice, but tools I give, because I'm not here to give my personal, like, professional advice. I'm here to share tools. That's what I can do, right? I can share my story and I can offer tools. So that's really my goal here. Basically, so, you know, that's what I'm trying to do, because I don't want to get sued. So, yeah, I do need to put the little disclaimer there. Anyways, so let's jump into it. When I have, I guess now that I've, like, had an opportunity to put some distance between, like, being unwell, like when I was actually sick, and where I am now, I actually am pretty, like, impressed with how much I have learned about myself and about just psychology in general. Because I, in this whole experience, even in the moments of crisis, I did, like, I guess my first response is to try to educate myself as much as I possibly could and learn as much as I possibly could about what was going on, what was I experiencing. And it was me trying to troubleshoot. But through all of that, I've learned a lot of cool tools, and I've learned a lot about human psychology in general, just even going through therapy and doing my own research. And I honestly, like, after doing all that work and still consistently going to therapy today. I will say, like, I cannot recommend therapy enough. I do think it's a tool, and you don't have to be in crisis to seek therapy. We in our society have this idea historically that people who go to therapy or seek mental health help, it has to be because of some sort of crisis. And that's just not true. Like, you can just learn a lot of helpful tools. So I think acknowledging that stigma, even though I think we've come a long way, and now that mental health is talked about a lot more regularly and it's much more part of the central discussion, that's something that I think we can all take advantage of. It's not easy with availability. Trust me, getting a therapist feels like a freaking nightmare sometimes. There's a lot of demand. I think this probably happened because of COVID. Like, it really shook people to their core in such a way that a lot more people realized that they needed to get help or were struggling to deal with their circumstances. And so there's been ever since a boom in demand for mental health services, which is good. But I will say it can be very frustratingly slow sometimes. That's just the nature of the game. But there are tools that you can use in everyday life that you can work on without necessarily working with a therapist. Like, there's kind of homework pieces you can learn to do on your own. And so the one tool that I use a lot, this is a set of tools that I've learned this year that I'm definitely taking into next year and probably forever because it's really helpful. And it's learning about cognitive distortions. So cognitive distortions are irrational thoughts that shape how you see the world, basically. It shapes how you feel and how you act. It's normal to have these thoughts occasionally, but they can be really harmful, like when they become too frequent or extreme. So a lot of times things like having biases, this is where a lot of biases come from. And what I learned about cognitive distortions is that really they're adaptions. Basically, human brains like to work as efficiently as possible when we're trying to predict the future and avoid danger and like survive, right? These are instincts that are based in evolutionary psychology. The human brain likes to make shortcuts that will help it quickly be able to assess a situation and react. And while these things can be helpful in a survival context or dealing with simple problems, they are not particularly well adapted to the complex world we live in today. So, like, I'm going to pull up my sheet here. This is a document that I found from it was given to me by a therapist from therapistaid.com. So it's a list of the most common ones, and you can find these. Anybody can Google cognitive distortions, and you can find this information on the internet pretty easily. And this is reasonably well listed. Like, I find this to be reasonably helpful. And it's just a list of the most common ones. It's not the only ones, but these are the most common human cognitive distortions. So the first one being, for me, catastrophizing. And let me tell you, I am somebody who catastrophizes a lot. That is something I've learned about myself this past year. Since I've been paying so much attention to the way I think about things and just like observing my own mind and using that mindfulness, I catastrophize a lot. I always think it's like something slightly bad happens. Next thing is going to happen. The world's going to catch on fire and split in half, right? Like that sense of like whatever bad thing will happen, anything bad that can happen will happen, and it's going to be the worst possible version of that. That's basically what catastrophizing is. When you're only seeing the worst possible outcomes of a situation. So, this is a really frustrating like bias to try to break and like recognize. Because as an anxious person, and any of you who have had problems, you know, if you've dealt with anxiety, you most likely catastrophize as well. And it's that sense of like, it's all going to be the worst possible outcome, that constant fear that it's just going to be terrible. Trying to read into the future. Because basically what catastrophizing is, it's an adaption. Because in certain contexts, catastrophizing can protect you, right? Like if you're, you know, going out into the woods alone at night, your mind might think, maybe there might be some reasons why taking a walk alone in the woods at night might not be such a good idea. There could be animals. There could be a serial killer. There could be, I don't know, you could fall into a pit and get stuck. Like, you know, what if this happened? That would be bad, right? That in that certain context, it makes sense. It does help keep you safe. That's essentially what your brain is trying to do, is keep you safe. However, this instinct is not very well adapted to more complex parts of human life, like, say, human relationships. And thinking, oh, if I, you know, like with friendships, maybe. I know I catastrophize a lot when it comes to like my friendships. And I'm constantly afraid that if I do or say the wrong thing, like all my friends are going to hate me and leave me. I think one of the reasons I've talked so much on the show about adult friendships is because I have been actively really learning a lot about myself and how I show up in friendships. And unpacking all of that stuff, because there's a lot to unpack there. I realized that most of my relationship-based drama in my life has to do with friendships. Like, I have drama with family, I have drama in romantic relationships, but those things, I know what the issues are, and it's easier to, like, tackle, because there are things that I've known about, and I can recognize more easily, because we talk about family and romantic relationships a lot when it comes to like evaluating relationships, but friendships not so much. So there's a reason I've given it so much attention lately on the show. I'm really trying to navigate how to improve my own friendships as I've been talking through it with you all who are listening. I catastrophize a lot, and this is where, you know, it can become really harmful in things like human relationships, because your mind, when you have a mind that wants to jump to the worst possible conclusion, that like totally colors how you interact and how you show up in that relationship. And like, for me with friendships, it makes me super, like, I feel either super guarded or like I take every little thing as I become very hypervigilant of people and being like, oh my gosh, I noticed, when we're in certain groups of friends, I noticed like this one friend isn't really talking to me. Oh my gosh, are they mad at me? What have I done? Like, or I'll get angry and be like, I don't understand. Like, why are people like, why am I not being included as much as I would be? I just make up all these scenarios in my head, and I can get really just sucked into it big time. And it usually is based on nothing. It actually makes me act more like standoffish. I end up acting really, I sometimes act out, and that in turn does cause friction, but it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. So yeah, I think catastrophization, she is probably my number one problem child when it comes to my own cognitive distortions, and I've seen how it comes out in my relationships. But it is also, I would say, definitely like a product of anxiety. And just know that sometimes, like, dealing with emotional dysregulation, like anxiety or depression, it's going to affect the way you think, right? So sometimes, like, for me, when I was experiencing mental illness, I was just not thinking clear. Like, I had all these negative fears and beliefs that at the time felt so real, and that now I can look back on and say, like, it was all an illusion. It is wild. It just, I don't know. The human mind is absolutely wild. It's fascinating and terrifying at the same time. So moving on, I hope, you know, if you tend to do a lot of catastrophizing, trying to think, like, what's helped me recognize it. And it's, I think, just realizing that I am prone to catastrophizing and learning about, like, learning to identify it when it's happening. That's been really effective. And one thing I ask myself is, like, if I'm, I catch myself worrying about something in the future and I start making up all these worst case scenarios, like, I'm not going to be able to get a job. No one's ever going to hire me, like, because I'm looking for new work. And it's like, I'm never going to find a job that works with my, you know, my scheduling needs. And I'm not going to find a job that fulfills me, blah, 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 blah. I have to just kind of, I catch myself ruminating, and then I'm able to practice, like, just stopping and be like, okay, hold on. I'm like, I think I'm doing the thing. I'm catastrophizing. And then one thing that can be helpful and has been helpful for me is just literally making up. Sometimes I'll have to write this down as a list and literally go, how likely is this to be true? Like, okay, assume the worst case scenario. No job is going to hire you. Why do you think that's the case? How realistically possible is that? And just, like, audit that belief, to question and challenge it. This isn't easy, guys. Like, it doesn't, it takes a lot of practice. I do this, like, there is some sort of catastrophizing that I'm dealing with pretty much every day. So, you know, but it's not necessarily an overnight fix, but it does become easier with practice and time. It becomes kind of a second nature thing, and you can do it. it's worth the effort. I will just say it is definitely worth the effort. But yeah, that is this just one of a long list of the lovely list of cognitive distortions I've been learning about. Catastrophizing is actually a part of magnification and minimization, which is when you exaggerate or minimize the importance of an event. Like, you can believe your own achievements are unimportant, or that your mistakes are excessively important, which is basically, it's kind of an extension of catastrophizing. If you think, I've done this myself, and this can really get you. Let me tell you, this is a confidence killer, because, I don't know, for some reason, some people have a tendency to minimize their strengths, and, like, anytime they do something good, they minimize that achievement. And for me, it was like, you know, getting a job or hiring. I think for me, it comes a lot with imposter syndrome, and this whole thing is very much tied into imposter syndrome. But it's essentially believing that you don't, like, deserve, or you're not capable of generating the positive outcomes that happen in your life. It must have been a chance. Oh, I just got that job because I got lucky. Oh, I got promoted because I got lucky, or something like that. When in reality, you might really have made a significant achievement. And I've had to, like, practice actually recognizing my own positive qualities and my own achievements. Because our brain has what's called negativity bias, right? Our brain always tries to look at the negative in life, because, again, in our animal brain, that is how the brain tries to keep you safe. Focusing on possible threats is an adaption that may keep you alive in some scenarios. And certainly in our evolutionary history, where we didn't have the complex societies we do today, these, like, psychological adaptions made much more sense. But the modern world is just really not well adapted. Our brains are not adapted for the modern world. Right? The environment changed way too fast for evolution to catch up, basically. So we have to, like, manually kind of override all this programming. And for me, and for many people, that negativity bias manifests as this magnification and minimization and catastrophizing. You're magnifying the bad and the outcomes, and it's all my fault. Something bad happens, it's like, it's the end of the world. You are a mess. You're incompetent. It's the end of the world. It's just overly dramatically negative, and you have maybe a hard time accepting and recognizing the positive things you do. And yeah, this can really sabotage your life. Like I think, like I said, this has a lot to do with imposter syndrome. I mean, the environment and things like the environment you grew up in and that you live in can definitely play into this as well. But these are like very well known. If you're somebody who catches yourself doing this, just know you're not alone. There's nothing like wrong with you. This is a very well documented, well known human, like human cognitive distortion. It is a glitch of the human brain, for better or for worse, mostly for worse nowadays. Anyways, but recognizing it can help you. So if you catch yourself always downplaying the good things that happen to you, you can, that's something you can start to change and like just challenge. And same thing if you always like tend to over magnify the bad things, like you can, you won't stop your brain from doing it. And that's something I've had to learn for myself. It's like, just because you learn to recognize these things doesn't make your brain stop doing it, but you can catch it and choose not to believe that distortion. And that's where the real power comes from. Anytime you're trying to change your beliefs or in your mindset, it comes, you can't like control the thoughts your brain produces, right? But you can change how you respond to them. And that is I think like the most valuable skill I have really had to hone in on this entire year. And I'm going on a bit of a, you know, just a little bit of a break before I continue down my list here. But I do want to say, I think that skill, the skill of being able to respond to your own brain in a way that is informed and where you can choose your response intentionally versus just outright reacting, I think that is the most valuable skill in our, like, our society needs as a whole right now. Like, you guys, I think a lot of the reason we are in a crisis where we are today is because the world has just become, people are overwhelmed. People aren't designed to handle the complexity of our modern, hyper-connected, over-informed, digitalized, like overstimulating society. And our brains are kind of going bazonkas, and people are being really like, people are getting emotionally hijacked all the time. Social media and technology plays a huge part of this. And people are very reactive right now. And people are thinking through a lot of these biases. So if there's one thing that you can take from this show, and I will say it again, it's the skill of responding rather than reacting to your thoughts and your feelings. That I think is going to be like, that's going to be, it's not kryptonite, because that's the wrong one. That is going to be our superpower moving forward into the next year. And just, I think, into this, like, forward in life in the modern world. So it's really, really, it's a really, really important skill. And I see, now that I've been putting a lot of effort into developing it in myself, I see how much it is lacking in the world around me and in society in general. And my God, it's bad, guys. We'll move on with that. That's, you know, cutting into another area of discussion that I wanted to possibly bring up if I have time. But for now, let's go ahead and continue down the list of cognitive distortions. I do want to get through at least all of these that I have on my sheet, so to give you an idea of, just to give you a base understanding. And again, you can find these, I think Psychology Today is a good resource as well if you want to learn more about these. So let's do this, because I think if I go down this list and talk through all of them, it would take way too long. So I'll just go through the list as it is written here. And then, yeah, I would highly encourage doing more research on your own about these. So we talked about magnification and minimization and catastrophizing. Then there's also overgeneralization, which is making broad interpretations from a single or few events. For example, you can say, like, I felt awkward during my job interview. I am always so awkward. So anything where it's like an always or never statement, always or never belief, is usually inaccurate. It's a form of black and white thinking, which is a larger bias. It's a larger irrational thinking pattern that this fits into. There's also magical overthinking, which is the belief that thoughts, actions, or emotions influence unrelated situations. So, for example, if I hadn't hoped something bad would happen to him, he wouldn't have gotten into an accident. right? It's this idea that, like, you can affect things that you have no control over through your thoughts, feelings, emotions, etc. Okay, I'm going to take a little brief caveat on this one. Like, I feel this needs to be said. I see a lot of magical thinking at play today in our world, and nowhere is this stronger than in the manifestation movement. If you are anywhere on the internet in 2024, you probably have heard the word manifestation many, many times, right? I manifested this. The whole idea of manifestation there is that if you channel your intention and focus, basically, if you hope really hard for something to happen, you can influence outcomes in the real world. And I do think there is something to be said about your mindset. Say, if you want to create an outcome from yourself. For me, it was like when I first started working in journalism and getting a job, and I was dealing with a lot of self-doubt. And, you know, I was working with a coach who used some of these quote unquote manifestation tactics, but really it was a practice of being intentional in how you direct your thoughts and your beliefs so that you can better curate them to create a mind frame through which you empower yourself to generate an outcome. Okay, that was a really wordy way of saying basically it's about realigning your attitude. And if you can convince yourself that you are capable of doing something, I'm capable. You know what? I want this job. This is when I was trying to get hired by EDM Maniac, which is my first ever paid writing job. And it felt scary and intimidating. And I would have probably talked myself out of it were I not working with a coach at the time. And one of the skills that helped me was that she taught me to really kind of, well, question those negative beliefs and visualize myself working in that job. Visualization can be a really helpful tool in helping you really, you know, hone in on a goal, an outcome that you want for yourself. So she helped me use things like visualization and making a plan and just putting myself in the mindset of that thing happening rather than reacting to the bad. I was in the mindset that, yes, I can do this. I can get this job. I think I will get this job. And using that mindset to help me propel forward. But at no point in time was the idea that I just need to think positive and, like, I don't know, make a wish and it'll happen. And because that's when we talk about magical thinking, that's really what we're talking about, is that our thoughts and feelings can influence things in the real world with no action on our half besides the thoughts and the feelings existing, which is exactly what I hear some people, like this, people who are really big into manifestation, sometimes going into this territory. And I do think that can be really, really just like harmful. One really heartbreaking example of this that I came across recently, that I saw, it was in the show Hoarders. some of you who still watch cable TV, you may remember this show. It's a documentary series that follows people who struggle with hoarding disorder. And there was an episode where there was this young woman who was a hoarder, and she, you know, this, I don't really know, it went a little bit into her backstory, and she had a lot of, like, loss in her life. She had trauma, but they didn't touch on her being neurodivergent, but just watching this person and how she talked and interacted, I think it was very clear that this is also somebody who is neurodivergent, possibly, like, most likely autism spectrum. So, you know, this is somebody who, you know, it is clearly in a very vulnerable state psychologically, emotionally. You know, somebody who's experiencing hoarding disorder, they're pretty sick. So at one point during the episode, they talked about, you know, what she has been trying to do to kind of help herself without much further aid. And, you know, I don't think she was getting much psychological help for things like her trauma and neurodivergence, but she was seeing a lot of spiritual healers, which I think can also be a good resource, let me tell you. But here's the problem with only using this kind of, using manifestation as a way to try to heal things like trauma or, you know, as a one-all-fix-all way of moving through life. There is a scene where she was getting really upset because they're starting to go through her house. And somebody couldn't make it to somebody couldn't make it to help her clean. And she was in really distraught state. She started having a breakdown. And, you know, she was talking about the fact that her house might have been impounded if it wasn't going to get cleaned up in time. And she started talking about how she believed she had manifested this bad luck because of her, well, you know, her mindset had been wrong. She'd been worrying about these bad things possibly happening, and now it was happening. And she was essentially blaming herself for bad things happening for her, which is so destructive. And that is the danger of the manifestation movement, is it can very easily cross into magical thinking, which really can be destructive. It flips on its head from being empowering to being destructive. Because if you think, oh, you're manifesting, anything that bad happens to you is your own fault, which is somebody who's been through trauma, somebody who, you know, like in the case of this woman, has maybe some developmental disabilities and other psychological issues, that is so incredibly destructive. You guys, watch out for the manifestation movement. I'm not saying it's all bad things. Like, there can be empowering tools and messages from the movement, but it is never a one-all answer. And it always examine when somebody, some TikTok girly is telling you about manifestation or something like that, like, look at this stuff with a critical eye, because a lot of this bleeds into the category of magical thinking, which is a cognitive distortion, and it can be a really destructive one. All right? I feel like I had to say my spiel on that, because I just see this everywhere today. You know, it's a huge thing. Like, I manifested this. Okay, babe, whatever. makes me a little irritated. But yeah, just if you encounter the whole manifestation movement in whatever way, shape, or form, just be mindful of that. Yeah, approach with caution, I would say. Always use a little bit of a questioning and cautionary approach to using manifestation as a self-development tool. Moving on. Okay. I still want to try to make it through this list. Okay, so we talked about magnification and minimization, catastrophizing, overgeneralization, magical thinking, and now personalization. Personalization is the belief that you are responsible for events outside of your control. My mom is always upset. She would be fine if I did more help, if I did more to help her. So, in this example, this is taking the perspective of a child who feels, you know, maybe has a parent who is emotionally distraught or has some, you know, emotional issues, and the child is blaming herself, saying she would be fine if I did more to help her. This can be a tricky one to pick up, and especially if you live with somebody who maybe, you know, you deal with emotionally manipulative people, you might need help identifying this one. And this, again, is why working with a mental health professional can be really helpful in helping you identify these distortions where they arise. There's jumping to conclusions, which is interpreting the meaning of a situation with little or no evidence. Mind reading falls under this. Mind reading in this case means like when you interpret the thoughts and beliefs of others without adequate evidence. This guy won't go out with me, probably thinks I'm ugly. You have no idea if that's true or not. You know, God knows what's going on. And so you don't know what's going on in other people's heads. You cannot live in other people's heads. And I catch myself doing this with friends. Again, this is where like this stuff really shows up in friendships for me. If I pick up tension or like I'm, you know, having an issue with a friend, and maybe it's a friend especially when it's a friend like I know, but I don't know all that well, My brain goes crazy making up scenarios about what they possibly could think is wrong with me. And you just, this is useless. You can't read other people's minds. The only way you'll know what's wrong, if something is wrong, is if they tell you. And this is a really hard habit to kick, let me tell you. I don't think you can, I can't stop my brain from doing this and coming up with these scenarios, but I'm trying to be good about not just getting sucked into it and fully falling for it. It takes a lot of practice. And then there's also fortune telling, which is the expectation that a situation will turn out badly without adequate evidence. Again, very closely tied to catastrophizing. Then there's emotional reasoning. This one's been a tricky one for me. Emotional reasoning is the assumption that emotions reflect the way things really are. There, I love that this sheet literally has this as the example. The example for this is, I feel like a bad friend, therefore I must be a bad friend. Oh my gosh. I literally, it's like, or I feel like I'm being a bad vibe, I must be a bad friend. Or like, this person is being weird towards me, they must be a bad person. Like, your emotions are not facts. That's a thing I've learned through therapy. And there's another therapist that does courses online, and she does little snippet videos on YouTube. Her account is called Therapy in a Nutshell. Again, if you're looking for personal tools, really great resource. Therapy in a Nutshell, again, is the name of the channel on YouTube. And one of the biggest things that I took away, the biggest lessons I took away from that account, and that I'm still very much incorporating into my life pretty much every day, is that your feelings are not facts. Your feelings are feelings. They are sensations. Sometimes they may be reflective of a real situation. Sometimes, oftentimes, they are not. You can't believe everything you feel. You can't believe everything you think, nor can you believe everything you feel. So it's a practice of, it's all about practicing that mindfulness and being able to understand that. That can be, it takes a lot of work, but it is something I found to be very empowering. Okay, moving on. This one kind of, I don't know why this is listed separately. I feel like this kind of fits in with some of the other, some of these blend together, but the next cognitive distortion is disqualifying the positive, which is when you only recognize negative aspects of a situation while ignoring the positive. You might receive many compliments on an evaluation at work, for example, but focus on the single piece of negative feedback, right? So that's, again, it's pretty closely tied into magnification and minimization. Discalling the positive, only accepting the negative. It's something a lot of us do. I know I do. Then there are should statements. The belief that things should be a certain way. I should always be perfect. Oh boy, I am addicted to shoulding. Things should be a certain way. This has been possibly one of the hardest, if not the hardest, cognitive distortion for me to confront, because I've realized so much of my world, the way that I see the world and the way that I respond to the way the world is like made miserable by having assumptions about how things should be. And as I'm a thinker, I'm someone who feels very deeply, and I'm very ideological. And when you're an idealist, I think it's a good thing to be an idealist, because it's good to have high ideals to shoot for, but ideals are ideals. They're not oftentimes reality, and accepting that fact that like those shoulds are hardly ever reflect reality, that is a very hard thing for me to digest sometimes, oftentimes. And I don't know, I feel that way about the world right now, like many things in the world. I don't even have any good personal tips for how to deal with it. I'm still grappling with how to accept, like having that acceptance of things being the way they are, accepting things for the way they are rather than how they should be. It's a rough one. And yeah, this also shows up in relation. I think for a lot of people, this shows up in relationships. My partner should act a certain way. My friends should talk to me in a certain way, include me in a certain way. And then, you know, those things, when those things don't match up with reality, causes friction. Yeah, it's a big one. And then finally on the list here, we have all or nothing thinking, which is thinking about an absolute. So there's always never or every time. Again, yeah, that's a black and white thinking. I'm always like this. Things are always like this. People are always like this. This is just splitting in the world into black and white. So that is the list of cognitive distortions that I have focused a lot of my energy on. It is by no means the like an exhaustive list of distortions. There's a lot of things on here that this list doesn't like show, just because there are so many ways that are, there are just so many ways that our human brain messes with how we interpret reality. It's a lifelong journey, I think, to really fully understand this on a deeper level, not to mention understand and accept how these things show up in your personal life. It really is. It's a lifelong journey. And I feel like for me, I'm on the beginning of it. I just started learning about these things maybe a couple years ago. And yeah, it's a lot of work, but I will say these things, you know, when you start to pay attention to the things like catching distortions, challenging them, and just accepting the idea that not everything you think or feel is a reflection of reality, that those have been very empowering lessons for me. And I really honed in on them a lot this past year in 2024. And those are the biggest things, the biggest lessons I'm taking with me into 2025, because it is going to be a ride, baby. yeah, it's, you know, I am anxious going into the future, going into 2025 under another Trump presidency. The political situation has filled me with a lot of dread, but then again, I'm really trying not to let myself catastrophize, looking at the facts, and yeah, I'm not really sure exactly how. There's nothing I can do as a person to change the world right now, but what I can do is change and try to be on top of how I respond to it. And if nothing else, I think that is the most important tool any of us can have right now. And just practicing that mindfulness within ourselves, to get to know ourselves, to learn about just how our own minds work, and why do we think certain way? Do people do what they do? Why do people think the way they think? These are good questions to ask. But rather than going into that, you know, that again, this is a distortion that shows up for me. It's like, oh, people are just stupid. People are just people are dumb. People are ignorant. People don't want good things. People are bad, right? All or nothing thinking, overgeneralization. These things are not true. The reality is much more complex than that. With that being said, understanding the reality takes a lot more work than jumping to a conclusion. I think a lot of people just feel too overwhelmed and exhausted to process all of that, because our daily lives are already so demanding, and that is totally valid. But yeah, I think we all have to really, reality is what it is, and we are living through a pretty weird time, a pretty tumultuous historical time. But at the same time, it isn't all bad. Like, there are things I'm looking forward to that I know I can directly affect in my personal life that I can change within this next year regarding my relationships, my financial situations. There are always things that you can control, and it's important to be able to strike a balance between, you know, addressing the problems and doing your part and taking care of yourself. And I don't know what, you know, I think that looks different for every person. I'm still trying to figure out what that looks like for me, but having the intention of doing that, I think, is going to be really important going into 2025. Because I think we live in a time where we can't just throw our hands up and give up, as tempting as that may be. And I've been tempted to think that way as well, but we just can't afford to. It is worth it to try to fix the problems we are facing, whether it's in your personal life, right? I overcame one of the, probably the most scary challenge of my life with a mental illness this last year, and I'm still here. And all that hard work, even the moments I wanted to be like, I just don't care anymore, I give up, I didn't never let myself, and I'm here, and I'm doing better. You know, it, putting in the work is worth it. And I think, like, as a society, we are living in a crisis, and we have to do uncomfortable work. But that uncomfortable work is worth it, and it is a way, what's important is making it personally sustainable to do the work by finding ways to take care of ourselves and be kind and strike the balance between nurturing yourself, nurturing your relationships, finding the good things so you have the fuel to fight. I saw a quote recently said, what was it? It was like, we fight to heal. Or once you're healed, you heal to fight. It's an exchange. I'm probably not putting it the right way, but it was, oh man, where did I see that? You have to be, you know, you can't pour from an empty cup, and it is worth it. We owe it to ourselves to be kind to ourselves and invest in ourselves and learn about how we can be better people for ourselves and for others so we can build a better future. So yeah, that is just about my time here. This is a pretty deeply personal conversation today, but there are so many other things that I didn't get to. So I'm thinking I'm going to do a part two of lessons I'm taking from 2024 to 2025. This is something I really felt like I had to speak about today. It's been the thing that's been at the forefront of my mind. So I really want to thank you for listening to the conversation today. I hope it was insightful for you. I hope maybe you found something helpful in it. And yeah, take some time to just be with your own thoughts. And I will continue thinking about other lessons I'm taking from 2024 to 2025. I have also some maybe more lighthearted, easier things like practical ideas and fun things that I can talk about in the next show. So I will plan for that. I'll be back next week with more ideas and lessons I can take into the new year. And hopefully you can benefit from that one as well. But that is all the time we have for today. So thank you again for tuning in. It's always good to share this time with you. I hope you all have a wonderful rest of your evening. And yeah, I will catch you next time. Bye-bye, everyone. So Did You Hear receives support from Stage Left Theater, located at 108 West 3rd Avenue in Spokane. Information at 509-838-9727 and online at stageleftheater.org.